I'd like to share with you some stories about flowers, but I don't think there are any flowers in them, in these stories. One night at bedtime, I asked Jordan to give me some idea for a story. We like to make up stories sometimes at bedtime. So I said, what shall I make a story about? He was feeling a little lazy, so he just said, I don't know, a pillow. So, okay. Once there was a pillow. He lay in bed all day. His bed was beside a window. And every day he could look outside the window and he would see the blue sky or the gathering clouds or sometimes the dark thunder and the lightning flashing and the rainfall on the window panes or sometimes the wind blowing through the trees or sometimes a bird flying by. Every evening, a head would come and lie down upon the pillow. And the pillow would hold the head in its lap, and as the head slept, the pillow would look out the window at the starry night sky, at the rising moon. And then in the day, the head would leave, and the pillow would still be there, looking out the window, watching the world go by. Day in and day out, this was the pillow's life. And eventually the pillow began to think, is this all I'm meant for? Lying around in bed all day? Looking out the window at the rest of the world? It was springtime. And before leaving the room, the head left the window open. That day, something strange happened. As the pillow was looking out the window, suddenly, a black bird lighted on the windowsill. And then, nervously, the pillow watched as the bird flew into the room and landed at the foot of the bed and then hopped closer and closer to the pillow. Hopped up and up and then, suddenly, pecked at the pillow and opened a hole in its casing. And then that black bird pulled out of the pillow a fine white feather and flew out the window. That's strange, thought the pillow. Odd, I feel strange, I feel different somehow. I didn't know I had that stuff in me. What was that? Shortly thereafter, the bird came back and pecked again upon the pillow in the same place, and the little tear, the little opening widened, and the bird pulled out several fine white feathers, and then flew off to feather its nest. More birds came, and soon the pillow had a wide, gaping hole, and its feathers were being pulled out and blown about, and the wind blew in through the window of the room, and its feathers lifted up and went flying out the window into the wide world, and the pillow thought, yes, this is what I've been wondering for. This is what I've been thinking of. This is what I am made for. This is what I'm meant for. No longer to be weighed down by that sleepy head. No longer to be bound in by that casing, but to fly free. And out into the world it went. And it went far and wide. It feathered the nest of other birds so that children might be hatched from the eggs. Some of the feathers fell down into streams and went twirling and dancing in the little eddies of the water, making their way all the way out to the sea. And some of them just continued to float aloft in the air. And every now and then you'll see one passing by if you're out playing in the sun or walking through the park. And when you see one of those feathers, you'll know that the pillow at last has fulfilled its destiny. The head, meanwhile, coming back and finding a flat pillowcase on the bed, replaced the former pillow with a nice hypoallergenic foam pillow and got the best sleep it had ever known in its life. See, there's a habit that can be sometimes disconcerting in the life of a storyteller, which is that it's a kind of a animism that comes about from dealing with the world of stories, because everything has a life to it. In the world of stories, as you know, chairs can talk, right? Pillows can have a soul. Everything has the possibility of being a personality in a story. And that can be sometimes immobilizing for a storyteller, because everything's got a point of view. And for example, if I'm out in the garden, I have a difficult time weeding, because who am I to say that that very industrious and capable plant does not deserve that little piece of earth that it's taken over for itself, you know? And when I do force myself to pull the weeds from the ground, I find myself feeling, oh, I'm so sorry. I know you're only a weed because I don't want you here. That's the only reason. And, you know, it can be difficult to do things around the house, right? Can be the ants. We get ants in of a season. You know, we all have little ants coming into our house, and we generally like to invite creatures like ants and beetles and spiders to, you know, take up residence in places that are perhaps better suited or better designed for them, like outside of the house rather than inside of the house. Right? My wife has no compunction about killing the ants on the counter, but I know, especially having read E.O. Wilson, that every ant I see is simply a member of a vast community of ants and is all one single organism. So every ant I see, I call Alice, because I figure that's who it is. There's a queen mother there somewhere hidden in the center of the core of that ant beyond my seeing. But I know that that ant is an extension of her, and I can't bring it myself to kill or squash that ant. It's just it's a challenge when the animated world is around you, being an animist, as it were. But there are advantages as well, because the animated life can be used in parenting successfully to kind of get things to happen. And here's my son, Jordan. I'm going to tell some more stories on him, and I hope he won't mind. But some long time ago, when he was not as big as he is now, and he was still riding in a double-buckle, shoulder-harnessed kid safety seat in the back seat of the car, we had to get somewhere. Here he is, a toddler. I'm in a hurry to get somewhere in that parental froth of anxiety. We've got to get there. We've got to be on time. And he's doing as children do very well, living absolutely in the moment. And he's standing on the sidewalk, enjoying the starry clusters of leaves and the Japanese maple as the sun is dappling its way through the branches. And I'm in a hurry to get there, and I'm on the verge of becoming angry. Get in the car. We're going to be late. So I use my storyteller strategies, and I decide to animate the seat buckle, the safety seat, right? So since I can't seem to get Jordan's attention, he's looking at the tree after all, I turn to the seat and I say, I'm sorry, guys. I guess Jordan's just not going to be going with us today. And the buckles, of course, have their own point of view. And so they reply, oh, that's too bad. We've been sitting here in the hot, stuffy car. We were hoping we'd get out. The only time we get to have any fun is when we get to hold on to Jordan and hold on to him and talk to him and find out what's going on with him and everything. Oh, man. And so we're having this conversation, me and the belt buckles, you know. And Jordan, that catches his attention, right? And so he gets into it, and he realizes, and I have to admit, and I have to confess, I'm sorry, but I think I really was shaming him into his seat, you see, making him feel bad about the belt buckles, but it worked. He said, oh, wait a minute, guys, that's okay, I'm ready. Hey, come on. Oh, great to see you, kid. Oh, let's give you a big hug. Oh, yeah. Hey, wake up down there, Ralph. That one little growing buckle down there that's always hanging down looking so sleepy, you know. All right, come on. Oh, whoa. Right, we're getting late. Hey, how you doing there? All right, we're ready to go. Okay, good. Yeah, I got him in the car. I'm ready to come around. I'm going to drive the car now. We're going to get on going wherever we go. The only problem is, if you bring to life something in the world, you are responsible for that life. So what I had to do now is these guys are alive, you know? I'm driving the car. Jordan's having a wonderful conversation with the belt buckles. It turns out they actually have a very interesting kind of perspective and personality, because they don't get out much, right? They're stuck in the car all the time. So the only way they get to learn about the world is by whatever they can find out from their passenger, from talking to Jordan. So now I'm in this schizophrenic mode where I'm the driver, right? I'm the chauffeur, I'm driving the car, but I'm throwing my voice back over my shoulder because the belt buckles are continuing to have this conversation with Jordan. And I realize, though, as a parent, it gives me an opportunity to engage in a kind of Socratic conversational style with him. Because the belt buckles don't get out, they don't know much about the world, they could ask him all sorts of just naive, open questions. So where are we going today? Oh, we're going to a park. Oh, that's great. What's a park? Well, you know, it's a place where you play. Oh, yeah, that's great. What is play? So, you know, all of these things we get to start to explore with the belt buckles, and we're having a wonderful time. And so forever after that, for quite an extended period of time, every time Jordan gets into the car, it's a conversation with the belt buckles, and I'm just the guy driving, you know. So this is the kind of the hazards that sometimes the animated world, and there are other ways in which there are hazards too. Several years ago, around the same time that the belt buckles are alive in the back of the car, I got a terrible toothache. And it's really throbbing, it's really hurting me, and I'm lying in bed, and I'm debating with myself whether I can afford to go to the dentist, and whether I really have to go that far as to make an appointment. Maybe it'll go away, you know, a little bit of analgesic and anti-inflammatory or something or other. And I just maybe, but I bet, yeah, I'm lying there, and it's throbbing in my head, and I'm aware that it's very likely that what's happening is there's some kind of an infection, right? And I know that an infection is a kind of an invasion. And I know that that means that there's some kind of bacterial organism that's living inside the root of my tooth there somewhere, setting up camp. And I realize that I've got this colony growing now inside of me. And I'm feeling so invaded, right? There's this thing in me growing inside of me. I'm thinking, well, you know, a tooth actually has a root, right? And so it is itself kind of like a plant, right? That's put a root down inside of me. So the tooth itself is kind of like, is that part of me? Or is that something that's taking advantage of me to plant itself like a weed in my garden, right? I mean, you know, there's roots in the lawn, right? And there's all sorts of plants there, and there's some that you want. So I mean, maybe this is a friendly plant. This is part of my garden, but the rooted tooth, but now there's this. So I'm getting very confused about, you know, where I'm feeling like I'm falling apart a little bit. Well, I finally got to the dentist, and the dentist takes a look at it and says, yeah, you have a secondary infection. We'll treat that with antibiotics. All right, we're going to make war against the invading bacteria. But he says, that's not the root of the problem. He says, the problem is what you have is what appears to be what we call root resorption. Maybe some of you have encountered that. Those of us that are in age and can learn all sorts of things about dentistry we never knew before. I said, well, what's that? Root resorption, but it's basically an immune response of your body. Your body is essentially attacking the root of your tooth and breaking it down. Now I'm really confused. Because I'm walking away from the dentist office. Antibiotics for the bacteria, okay, I can kind of understand that. But root resorption, I'm thinking, how am I having a hard time getting along with myself? Right? So, how is it possible that I'm attacking me, you know? And which side of this conflict should I be on? You know? And so it begins to beg certain questions like, who am I anyway? Now, my wife is a health and wellness instructor, and so she's very concerned that I'm on antibiotics. It's something we only use as a last resort, and I think we all understand some things about that. I was raised in a generation that thought antibiotics were the bomb. They were absolutely the best thing to use to deal with any kind of illness. We were always dealing in a kind of a conflict, confrontational, kind of shock and awe approach to any kind of ailment, right? And that was employing antibiotics. But this is a new age. We are a little more enlightened, I think. And now we understand something we call probiotics, right? That is, that there are actually beneficial biota. There are beneficial organisms that can help us stay healthy and also combat perhaps the less beneficial biota that might invade our bodies. And so having finished my regimen of antibiotics, my wife puts me on a regimen of probiotics. And so I'm going from the anti to the pro. And that's fine. I like having more positive outlook on life. But I'm learning too. I'm realizing that in terms of the probiotics, what I'm doing essentially is I'm feeding and also I'm planting communities of organisms into my body. And I begin to learn something about what we call the human essential microbiotic system of our body. And many of you may be aware of this already, but that essentially there are 10 times as many microbial life forms in our bodies as there are human cells. Okay? So we're getting born, right? We're subdividing in utero into a little embryo. We're becoming a human being made up of all of these differentiated cells that becomes our whole human body. But shortly after birth, those human cells essentially become, well, a garden bed for myriad microbial life forms that all come and inhabit us and play a very important part of how we are able to live in the world. In other words, we are made up. We are only 1/10 human, right? And the other 9 parts are all of these other individuals that have come along for a ride here. So now I'm really confused, because I don't know where I end and the rest of the world begins. And I don't know who I am anyway. I mean, you know, it's like, who's making the decisions here? You know, if this is a majority rule kind of governance that's going on inside my body, I'm in the minority. Or what I think I am, the human cell of me, maybe that's not even what I am. Maybe the I that is thinking I am I is really some sort of a congregation of microbes, you see? And that, now, there are times when it becomes apparent to me that the microbes are really running the show. Now, maybe you've had this experience. There's some yucky, awful, ugly thing. You know, it's on the sidewalk. Maybe it's because of something the cat did, right? And you've got to clean it up. It's okay. You pick it up and you deal with it, right? No sooner have you dealt with it than your nose itches. Who's doing that? Who's saying, now, touch me, quick, whatever it was you had your hand on, I want it in me, you know, give it to me, put it, your eye itches, you rub your eye. Our children are doing it all the time, right? I'm watching my children. Oh, as soon as he's picked up something on the ground that catches his interest, it's all yucky and icky and dirty and everything, and then he puts it down, he puts his finger in his mouth. Like, that's how it happened. So it's really, I'm beginning to feel very pixelated at this point. It's a kind of a balkanization of the self. Well, around this time, the kitchen drain clogs. And so I've got the plunger on the kitchen sink, and I can hear this rumbling deep down in the wall below the sink, right? It's indigestion. My house has indigestion. And so I become aware that I am inhabiting the house in the way that the microbes are inhabiting me, and that my house has its own systems that have to do with how it is maintained. And in a sense, I serve the house in a symbiotic relationship, because the house gives me shelter, it gives me a place to sleep, it gives me nutriment, and I take care of the house, right? I clear the clogged drains, I wash the windows, I put a fresh roof on it, I repair the house. And so I'm living in the house just like the microbes are living in me. And now my house has got indigestion. So I'm going to the Ace Hardware store to think, well, maybe I could snake it out. I tried a little snake that I've got in here. I've never been very successful at that. I call the plumber, I say, how am I going to clear this out? He says, well, I've got this high-powered, you know, plumber guy's snake, I can use this, but it's going to cost you $200. And I'm thinking, maybe I'll try and find a cheaper solution. So I'm looking for, like, drain cleaners. So, you know, there's acids and awful things that, you know, you can put down the drain that will sort of burn through a clog in the drain. But I find also on the shelf in this enlightened age, biotic drain cleaners. Microbial, bacterial substances that you pour down the drain, and those microbes eat the clog and clear the drain. It's probiotics for your house. So I'm getting this constant confirmation that yes, I am part of this larger being, this organism of which I hadn't really been fully aware, but I've been just taking care of my own self. So I'm dealing with my house's indigestion by pouring probiotics down the drain while I'm putting probiotics down my drain to deal with my own indigestion and my own need for balance, or the microbes that are inside of me will receive, if you will, manna from heaven that will then give them the nutriment they need in order to continue their existence, their nice little solipsistic existence down there in the darkness of my gut that is really benefiting me out here, way out here on the edge of their universe, right? So you can understand, I'm a little confused about who I am, what I am, where I begin, where the world ends, where the world begins, where I end. And I'm reminded of a wonderful limerick that the philosopher Alan Watts used to say. There was a young man who said, though, it seems that I know that I know. What I'd like to see is the eye that knows me when I know that I know that I know. So it's around this time that we're going to early in the school year pizza party. Kids are coming back. Jordan's moved up to another grade. He's still riding in his car belt buckle seats. And so we're on our way to a pizza party at school. And so, of course, we get into the car. And right away, Jordan says, "Hi, guys!" And I know who he's talking to. The belt buckle. "Hey, kid, how you doing today? Hey, where are we going today? What are we going to go do today? Hey, it's good to see you. Hey, come on, get here. Give me a big hug. All right. Hey, wake up down there. I'll be like, oh, okay, let's go." So we're in the car, and we're driving on the way to the school. And the belt buckles are asking, "Well, where are we going today? What are we going to do today?" And Jordan says, "Oh, man, we're going to go to school. We're going to have a party at school. We're going to have pizza." And the belt buckles don't know anything. They don't get out much, you know. And so they're saying, "Well, wow, that sounds really cool. Yeah, what's a pizza?" "Well, it's food. You eat it. And it's my favorite food." "And oh, that's great food. Okay, something that you eat. Or, you know, we know about that. We got mouths. We like to put things in our mouths too. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what's it made out of?" And then Jordan says, "God." And the belt buckles don't know what to say to that. There's a pause. We're driving. And then he says, "Isn't that right, Dad?" I haven't been part of the conversation. I'm driving along, so I said, "Huh? What? Isn't what right?" He says, "Isn't pizza made out of God?" So I'm thinking, how do I answer this as a Unitarian? All right, well, you know, certain theist perspectives present themselves to me, the idea of the omniscience and omnipresence of a divine being that we might call God. That would probably answer the question, but, you know, the Greek philosopher Democritus posited the notion that there is somewhere at the base of all material being some indivisible unit of matter that he called the atom. And we still think about atoms, although we've discovered that they're not indivisible, that they're actually made up of even smaller things, and so that if you kind of keep going down far enough, you'll find that, you know, everything is pretty much made of the same stuff. You go down, break it down far enough there, and now I'm reminded of the Aztec cosmology in which they believed that Teot was the stuff of universe, and it really wasn't stuff, it was action, it was an isness. Teot, which was always forming and reforming itself into all of the stuff that we consider to be the hard-formed material earth, things like pizza, would be made by Aztec Teot. And my physicist friends would tell me that they're thinking lately that free-floating electrons that form a plasma moving through space carries a current across space, and if you increase the intensity of that current, you get what they call Birkeland currents, and they form these helical strands that wind around one another, and as the intensity increases, those strands get knotted and they ignite stars and begin to fuse and form matter. So plasma, maybe, is and so whether it's plasma or atoms or teot, there is probably something that's maybe everything is made of. It could be that everything comes from nothing. It could be that everything's made of nothing. Out of nothing comes something. You know, we get deeper down into the subatomic realm and we find that there's more space between what we consider to be things than there are things there. So maybe it's the nothingness. Maybe that. And so why not just call that God. I think of Einstein's non-anthropomorphic concept of God, speaking of the universe as this fully integrated and, in a sense, having an innate kind of intelligence, what the evolutionary biologist E.O. Wilson would call the logic of the universe. So maybe there's this logos that is the logic of the universe that's forming all of this stuff. And all this is going on while I'm sitting at a red light, and then the car honks behind me. And finally, I answer him. I say, "Why, yes. Pizza must be made of God." And suddenly, the day was luminous. Numinous. As I realized, that's what I am. That's what we are. That we're in something really big. And we don't end. There is no place where we end and something else begins. It's just all one continual cycle that has little knots in it that thinks that they're special. But the deeper down you go, you find that you're just really a host for microbes. And then we discover that the house is a host for you. And the house itself is, you know, a microbe living in a community, and that community is in this greater global sphere, and even the globe itself is part of an electrical circuit board that is this, what we call the solar system, which is part of an even vaster network of interchanging energies, of which we are just tiny little microbiota. We are the gut flora of universe. With our own flora, our own flower inside of us. And that what we do, whether we know it or not, has a precessional role in the whole integral web of being. This is where we get to flowers. The butterfly and the honeybee come to the flower when the flower is open, when the flower is essentially the plant saying, "Yes, here I am. In full bloom, I am flower. I am flower, which is a verb. I am flourish. I am flourishing. And I have that which I wish to share." And the bee says, "Okay, great, I'm going to make some honey. I'm going to make honey. And the bee has not intending at all to pollinate all the rest of the garden or the flower. That's happening at 90 degrees of the bee's intention. That's the precessional realm, the periphery of what the bee thinks it's doing is where the real work is happening. It's where the real mystery is. That's where the mystery is. Therein resides faith. But not what I would call a faith. You know, no codified creed. You know, people say, "What faith are you?" You know, as if it's an a thing. I believe that faith is a state of mind. It has to do with trust. It has to do with accepting that whether we know it or not, who we are and the way we are is serving why we are, whether we know it or not. Oh, a little over 80 years ago, Norbert Čapek in Prague introduced to his congregation the Flower Communion, to the Unitarian congregation in Prague. On a visit to the States, he told his fellow American Unitarians about the Flower Communion, introduced it to us, and he returned home to Prague. And then he joined millions in the Holocaust ashes of World War II and perished there. But his processional life continues to flourish. As we gather here, so many years later, celebrating in our curiously faithless, faith-based community, the flourishing that is beingness that is the beauty, that is, as far as we can understand it and stare beyond into that which we do not know, the mystery. Dave Wilcox was telling me about his work with the Marine Lab at William & Mary College and about the way that they're looking at the health and the robustness of the Chesapeake Bay by studying the eelgrass and the other seagrasses that grow in the bay. He was explaining to me the whole relationship between the silt of the bay, the grasses, the epiphytes that live off of the grasses, the little bugs that eat the epiphytes, and then the crabs that eat the bugs that eat the epiphytes that eat the grasses. Right? Now, if there are too many epiphytes, they destroy the grasses. Right? If there are too many bugs, they eat all the epiphytes and they start eating the grasses. If there are too many crabs, they eat all the bugs, but they don't eat the epiphytes. The whole thing is a really mysterious, delicate, precessional balance. But ask any given epiphyte what it's doing, and all it will tell you is that it's making a living for itself and doing the best it can. And that's where we, you know, have something in common with all of this great, beautiful, mysterious life. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to continue and to do what we think is best and right, because we can learn things about the life cycle of eelgrass and epiphytes and arthropods and crabs. We can learn about that because now we can be conscious of that. We can participate in the maintenance of the microbiota of the planet, of which we are also microbiota, and play our role as the microbes on this planet too. But beyond that, beyond what we can know, then all the best we can do is flourish, is to be the best flowers we know how to be. So gather your power and then share that flower power.